Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's music row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now. Today on the show, we'll be hearing from Sylvanesso's Nick Sanborn and Amelia Meath. They've been making music together since 2013, when Amelia asked Nick, a music producer and bassist, to remix her band Mountain Man's hit single, Play It Right. He did, and as they say, the rest is history. From the very beginning, Sylvanesso's had a very sleek electro-pop feel to their production. Amelia's powerful voice is front and center, surrounded by harmonies and samples of her own voice. Nick's genre-destroying bass creates intricate pulsing grooves for Amelia's voice to inhabit. Now the married couple and electronic duo have released their fourth studio album, No Rules Sandy. It's a follow-up to the band's Grammy-nominated 2020 album, Free Love. This new album is a mix of improvisation and experimentation, recorded primarily in the span of 3 weeks at a rented studio space in LA just earlier this year. On today's episode, Bruce Headlam speaks with Amelia and Nick about their creative process and how No Rules Sandy came to be. They also play songs off their new album, Live For Us. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's Bruce Headlam with Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn of Sylvanesso.
There's a light.
salad, people.
Thank you so much. That was a live version of Echo Party from Sylvan Esso's new album, which is No Rules Sandy. All that sound was created by just two people in the studio with me, Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for that great version of that song. I will also mention that the new album got a rave review from the New York Times, which does not often give rave reviews. Before we get into how you create so much music, just the two of you, let's talk a little bit about this new album, how it came about.
Nick and I have started a tradition where every January we load our car full of things and drive from North Carolina to Los Angeles. This January was no different. We were on our way to go both do a bunch of songwriting sessions and also go to the Grammys at the end of the month and get some Los Angeles sunshine. And then when we got there to our rental, the Omicron variant had spiked and everything was canceled. So Nick and I found ourselves with like a little baby studio set up in this house with no one to hang out with other than each other. And so every day we tried to write a song. And the most magical part of it was that every time we tried, we could. We wrote all these songs in about the span of 3 weeks together.
Yeah, it was just kind of this magical, totally unexpected time that neither of us really saw coming. And it was all kind of born out of this wild trip that like where everything went wrong except this.
Do you write every day when you're in Durham as well? Or only when you have to put out an album?
No, I don't. I find that when I'm in the practice of songwriting, it won't be like around a record necessarily, but I'll do it in a short period of time pushing towards something. But normally I have to like chill out between writing. Otherwise, I only write songs about writing songs, and you can only write so many of those.
When you are writing, because you guys, this is electronic music, how does a song typically begin? Does it begin with a loop? Does it begin with a sound? Does it begin with a lyric? How does this come together?
It happens in all sorts of different ways. How it's been happening most recently is Nick and I will sit in the same room and Nick will start making noise and I will encourage him in the directions that I like. So like if he finds like a beautiful section that he makes, I'll be like, loop that. Let's loop that and then let's build something around that. Or sometimes he's just doodling around and then I begin responding by writing lyrics.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we haven't ever found like a formula. Or the minute we do come up with anything that works more than once, I think we immediately get sick of it or it doesn't feel as inspiring anymore. It's kind of this process of each of us is trying to kind of shock or surprise the other one into maybe something we wouldn't expect. And it's kind of this Jacob's ladder kind of situation where we're each trying to hit the ball a little higher than the other one.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a host of great songs on this record. Tell me how this one came about, the one you just performed.
Echo Party?
Yeah.
We got the chorus first because Nick had that beautiful bass part.
Yeah, we had like the beat and the bass line, and we knew sometimes that's all you need to know something's going to be cool.
Yeah,
like, you know, you can see,
there.
You can't quite see the whole song yet, but you have this piece of it that's so promising that you almost don't want to mess with it too much for fear that you might overcook it or screw it up somehow.
Yeah, that was the loveliest part of this song, was we got the chorus first, and then the chorus had no words. It was just me going like,
yeah.
And Nick and I got so stoked, and we kept on trying to play it for other people, and everyone would be like, but Nick and I knew that it was, Nick and I were like, this song's gonna be great. No one, we could only hear it in our heads, though.
Yeah, and you gotta like kind of let it reveal itself.
Yeah, and then one day, I just sat, unlike all of our other records, usually I agonize about lyrics, and they either appear right when I'm writing the melody on top, or they are incredibly elusive. But with this record, I just sat down and would make myself just write them out. So like one day we got all the lyrics. I knew that it was going to be about like being in an empty city at nighttime and like trying to find the party of your dreams.
When you had that idea of there being less people every time you go back to something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where that echo party phrase started happening. And that kind of became like the central, like everything kind of ended up hooking around that.
Yeah. So it's about how it fades in every reverberation. Oh, yeah. That's really interesting. Now, because of the way the songs are put together and there are loops and then there's a bass line, often very syncopated, are you guys thinking in terms of conventional chords? Are you like, do you ever say, well, this sounds good, but here I'm going to play a C minor on top of that, because that's how most people write. They sit at a guitar, they sit at the piano, and they play a few chords.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you guys, it feels like you're on a high wire with what you're doing, because it doesn't have that sort of harmony running through the whole thing.
I think a big thing we do is more like reharmonizing. That's a big, when I was talking earlier about trying to surprise each other, something that I will do a lot is she'll have a melody that we really love. But like, let's say the third time it happens, I want to, it's like she changed, the lyrics change and the feeling of what she's saying changes, even if the melody doesn't. So like in that way, we'll absolutely think about in a more theory kind of based mindset of like, okay, how can I reharmonize the thing she's already doing to kind of change your perception of the same idea? We do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
We do. I learned how to play the guitar during the pandemic, and all the songs that I write on the guitar aren't as melodically interesting as the ones that I write in the air or like in response to what Nick makes. So I'm sticking to that at the moment.
Oh, that's interesting. You find it more confining then?
Yeah, or like maybe it's also because I'm a little guitar baby. You know, it's a CDG world for me in the guitar. And if I'm just writing in the air, all chords are open.
Yeah, it's just much freer.
Now, what was your music experience growing up in your home?
I'm from a theatrical singing family. We used to sing around the dinner table a lot. And I grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and there was a solstice celebration called the Revels. So every solstice, we would all get together and sing folk songs.
Wow. Were they performers or are they just amateurs?
Yeah, they were amateurs. My mom was in audio and my dad was in TV, but there's a lot of singing and musicality and creativity.
So you grew up on their folk music? Is this like 60s folk music or?
Oh, really what we're listening to in the house is like Bonnie Raitt and Foreigner and Nick Lowe. But the songs that we would sing were all, were like a mix of those and folk songs.
Okay. And then your, I don't know if it's your first career, but you sing mountain music with Mountain Men, which was your first group.
Yeah, Mountain Men.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you still perform, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and did you play piano growing up then or anything else? Or was just, it was just a singing thing?
I tried to play piano, but, or I just hated practicing.
Right. Yeah, well.
Hated it. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, you took piano lessons, which just kills more piano players than anything.
100%.
I also think that's one of those things. I was always jealous of people who could sing really well at a young age because I think if you have that, you're kind of set. Like nerds like me who didn't have that, I think I, that's why I practiced so much because I really wanted to be in a band, but I like couldn't do the natural thing, you know?
Well, but you actually know what you're doing.
But only because I've sat for a billion hours looking at charts and stuff like that, you know?
I think that's cooler. Also, the thing that you do, like I feel like you get to relish the experience of having gotten good at something. I'm much better at singing than I was when I was six, but like... It doesn't...
Oh, is there no, like, moment?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's just a thing you do.
So you never felt, I've achieved this level of expertise?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Maybe?
I can see that, yeah.
Well, when you get your honorary degree from Berkeley...
Oh, my God. What
then
if?
I hope you feel...
Oh, my God.
Last that you've got... Once you have that piece of paper...
Exactly.
Oh.
Then we'll know.
Yeah.
Oh, what's going to happen when that happens? That's going to be great. I'm going to dance all around.
Yeah, you're the, you need the diploma. You're like from The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
That sounds
That's what
great.
You need.
I love diplomas.
Yeah. And Nick, you need a heart.
No, yes.
I'm kidding.
Weirdly, I'm the one without a diploma, but yeah.
It's true.
Okay. So what was your musical experience growing
up?
Oh,
my dad's a really great mandolin and guitar player. And so we always were singing in the house, and he taught me how to play guitar when I was a little kid. And I was just always excited about it. Like I got, you know, we could get into orchestra in like the fourth grade or whatever. And I was lucky enough to go to a public school that had a music program.
Where was this?
In Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
So that kind of opened, I mean, that was just like massive for me as a kid, you know, being able to do that was just crazy. So I like, you know, got into like, I think I played like violin or something horribly. And then I started playing saxophone and ended up playing bass in the jazz band. I really loved that. And then when I went to college before dropping out, I was a composition major.
Mm-hmm. So, where was that?
UW-Milwaukee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then we will have to describe your setup, because this is electronic music, and I'm looking at a table with a bunch of different modules.
Oh, yeah.
Including one that has many, many patch cords running in or out. I don't know how to describe it except to say that if your breaker box at home looks like this, call an electrician.
It's just utter chaos up here.
Tell me what you've got, and can you give me a sample two of the sounds you create?
Yeah, so I have this whole computer setup that has kind of all the individual little pieces of our songs,
mm-hmm.
and it's set up kind of in this like really elaborate DJ style, like I'm DJing each individual little piece of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one side of it, and then I'm sampling Amelia's voice. And then I also have this whole other side that's all these other instruments. The breaker box you were referring to, my modular synth is doing a bunch of drums and processing and stuff like that.
And is that actually, is that a Moog? Or I'm never sure if it's Moog or Moog.
No, there is a Moog. I think it's Moog.
It is Moog?
There's
okay.
a Moog in here, this a thing called a DFAM, which sounds like this. It's this little like kind of...
Mm-hmm.
Does a lot of drums and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, and it's all getting the clock from the computer. But then there's also all sorts of little drums in here. I've got this little thing that makes kind of a... this kind of weird little wavetable thing. All this is just to kind of bring like a live edge and It's all things where I can replace something that's happening from the record or alter it in some way or stretch it out. I always like it when I see a show and it feels like, you know, there's this beautiful painted picture of the song as it was, and then you can go in and just kind of mess it all up. Mm-hmm. And then try to snap it back into focus. So all the things are kind of leaning into trying to make something like that happen. I have this little sampler that I use all the time that's got, you know, pieces of Amelia's voice or pieces from the records that I can then kind of pitch all around.
Now, are you ever sampling her voice live?
Oh, yeah.
When she's singing?
Oh, yeah.
You're sampling as well, and then...
Yeah, definitely.
So, Amelia, is that... Does he often surprise you? He's suddenly your voice... You're hearing your voice in a way you didn't expect?
Yeah, I usually have to keep pretty low in my mix, because if a voice comes in while you're singing, it can pull you off pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But Nick is able to sample anything that I sing.
Wow. I would say it's a good thing you guys get along so well.
It really is.
Because if he wanted to mess you up...
He really could.
He could mess you up in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sometimes use a drum machine on stage, is that right?
I do it sometimes, but honestly, I really like when we're live... I like being able to sing and connect directly with the crowd and with mm-hmm. Nick, and have that be yeah. my role.
And Nick, you are playing this like a DJ. You don't have a keyboard, a traditional
keyboard. I do. You know, I do normally. We didn't bring it today because we weren't playing any songs that needed it. But I have this one synthesizer that I use a lot. But none of it, even that, it isn't getting... I don't know how to describe it. It's all live. You know, I'm playing little arpeggios and stuff over the tops of the songs. But yeah, most of it is just this kind of more abstract way of thinking about it, which is that's just my favorite. I like it when something feels a little bit more like an idea, maybe, than an instrument, if that makes any mm-hmm. sense.
How did you discover that then after playing guitar, after playing bass, after playing mandolin, in which you're locked into a fairly traditional role?
Yeah.
What was your first encounter with this
like
kind of electronic music? And what do you remember what grabbed you?
A big thing for me was when I was playing in the jazz band and I was about to go to college, I kind of had this realization that if I was going to keep doing what I was doing, I was going to be practicing like 8 hours a day to just try to be a middle level jazz player. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of started realizing that the idea of what was happening was so much more interesting to me than what I thought I had to say as a player. And so I leaned into that and I moved into composition and started going that way. And I think electronic music was just a natural extension of that. It was like, okay, like I've been in this role playing bass and kind of filling this spot within a band, and that's its own skill set. But with electronic music, it was like, well, how do I put this whole piece together? What does this full picture look like? And that just became way more interesting because I could be the whole band,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I could try things out without worrying about wasting anyone else's time. There's no set way to do it. And so everybody who gets into it is kind of reinventing their own wheel in a way. And that, to me, is really exciting. I love thinking about like systems and how something could work.
Mm-hmm. Now, to me, one of the things that's interesting about your music, you mentioned you came in with a chorus first on this, is you move from ideas very quickly. If you were in a big band or the kind of bands you grew up with, you guys would get a groove and then someone would be soloing. But it's very much about kind of finding that one thing and finding people playing over it. This, you move very quickly from piece to idea to idea. And just when I think, oh, you know, I like this, and then it veers into something else, is that just part of playing electronic music for you?
I think we definitely love surprising each other. And I think that makes us lean into contrasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think generally speaking, we love having things that feel like there's a bunch of hard left turns being made. And that feels really engaging.
But it's also pop music, so every part that appears usually comes back, unless it's the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So like if it veers, usually it returns once more.
That's, I think, the most interesting part too, is like seeing how hard of a turn you can make and still make it make sense that you got back where you started.
Yeah, and live inside the pop music structure.
And maybe when I said high wire earlier, maybe that's what it is. That is like jazz, in that, like, how far can this guy go in a solo, or how far can she go in a solo?
Yeah.
is she going to be able to find her way back is always kind of the fascinating question.
I love that idea too of like communicating intent to the listener, like figuring out ways to show them that they can trust you to make your way back, or that you're not just going to waste their time. We think about that a lot with things like how can we design a song or a recording that shows somebody that we made this wild choice on purpose, so that next time we do, you know that we're not going to fake you out. Like this is all like an equation, like we're getting somewhere.
We'll be right back with more from Bruce Hedlum, Amelia Meath, and Nick Sanborn. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora: to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
We're back with more of Bruce's conversation with Amelia and Nick.
Now, Amelia, was your first encounter with electronic music when you guys met?
Oh, no. I've always been a fan of electronic music.
Okay. What in particular was,
you know,
sort of, what did you like?
Yeah, I started with ELO, naturally, and then got more excited about the independent music of the early aughts, so, you know, Animal Collective, Caribou, Fortet, just the people who were popular or interesting when I was, like, a little baby going to shows. And then when Nick and I met, it was the first opportunity I'd had, I thought, to find a collaborator with whom I could make pop music.
Now, there is the story that the first time you met, you asked him to arrange a song that you had written. Is that true?
Yeah, it was a song that was for Mountain Man, and I wanted to do a remix album.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked Nick. And
that was the first time you'd met?
Shortly thereafter.
Yeah, shortly thereafter.
Wow.
Yeah, because he opened for us in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
At the Cactus Club. And we became friends on Twitter. It was like the early days of Twitter when it was nice to be on there. It was like when you could like make friends
really?
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yes.
We had followed each other on Twitter for a little while, and I asked Nick for a remix of that song. Mostly because so many of Mountain Man's, the arrangements that I would do for Mountain Man were naturally quite sparse. And it took him a really long time.
No pressure.
Well,
no
like
pressure,
a
Nick.
Year.
A
I'm
year.
I'm glad I didn't know that.
Well, what did you think? If you were you guys dating at that point? Or
no,
just,
no. Band first.
Oh yeah. But if I had known that it was going to lead to this, it would have taken me even longer though. I would have felt more pressure.
Well, that's good that you didn't know.
Here's my song.
Yes.
No pressure.
Well, it's terrifying too, because the thing that's one of the many things that's so special about Mountain Man is just what isn't there. And so the idea of trying to add instrumentation to a Mountain Man song as a fan of theirs was like terrifying to me, because every time I put something in, I made the song worse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was a kind of light in the attic moment when I figured out that if I used their voices as the extra instruments, that was a way in. That kind of unlocked the whole thing for me, and then kind of defined a lot of what we still do now. I mean, even that last song we played, Echo Party, that started on as a loop of Amelia's voice, that little backbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do that all the time to this day.
To explain that to me again.
So, like, I took her voice, like, she sang, we were trying to find a way to start jamming this one day.
I did a stack.
Yeah.
Which was like, ooh. And then I did another part on top of that, and yeah, and then like another part on that, and then, you know, a thing that we say all the time to each other is, and then we chopped it up and made it into a beat, which is what we did.
Well, so then I took this vocal loop of hers and put it in this, what did you call it earlier? The breaker box? I put it in the breaker box here.
Scary looking breaker. Well, it's what the breaker box looks like at my place.
Yeah.
So that's, I just reminded that my house might be burnt down by the time I get there.
But yeah, so I just kind of kept playing with it and changing the way it was sequenced and moving the little bits of it around and found that initial loop, that little bing, 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 that little thing just kind of popped out. And the minute we found it, we were like, oh, that, here we go. Now we can start.
Okay. Now that you've been doing this, Amelia, for 8 years, how has it changed how you sing? At first, I imagine you were singing and he was grabbing parts of it, samples, and manipulating it. Wouldn't it become tempting after a few years to like, well, I'm going to sing a sample. I'm not going to sing the way I used to sing. I'm going to try and sing almost in a kind of...
in a sampled way.
In a sampled or electronic
in
way.
In a soundbite way.
Yeah.
I think if anything, I'm more... in order for the samples themselves to be good, you have to be singing... like, I really have to be solidly in my lane doing exactly what I'm doing. And then the sample will shine. Otherwise, if you're being tentative, or if you're trying to do something as opposed to actually doing it, then it gets lost. So I think if anything, I've just become a better and more confident singer.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of Mountain Man's songs were a cappella.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you must have already felt comfortable singing without a kind of full arrangement behind you or a piano or a guitar to kind of establish what you're doing. What's it like singing in this music? Because you have a very, very distinctive style, the way you do it. And you interact with the sounds in this unique way.
I think there's, because of the way that I naturally write in the air or in response to what Nick is doing, and I write lyrics and melody usually at the same time, my voice is in general, I kind of think of it like a percussive instrument more than I do like a narrative device, or both things are happening at the same time. So that's the thing, is that because I think of it as an instrument unto itself that's more percussive, it's actually quite easy. It's like being a, you know, water and more water.
Hmm. Can we hear another song?
Sure.
Great.
It's a jump to rise, lift off right now. Don't know how to swim in the air, come on, I'll teach you how. It's a step inside the stratus cloud. Don't
don't know how to walk in the sky. Come on, I'll teach you how. Let me help you, let me fight. Let me remember how to live my life. Were the rules originally, are we learning how to be serene but free? It's your reality. It's your reality. It's a jump to rise, lift off right now. Don't know how to swim in the air. Come on, I'll teach you how. It's a step inside the stratus cloud. Don't know how to walk through the sky. Come on, I'll teach you how. Let me help it, let me fight, fight. Let me remember how to live my life. Were the rules originally, are we learning how to be? Let me build it, watch me try. Let me make it up this time.
So that song, Your Reality, Nick and I hear the one in a different place. And we decided as we were writing it that we were going to affirm each of our counting styles in it. And I knew in order to justify the second rotation of the verse, I wanted to have a backup part that would roll, continue to roll the song forward, but like add kind of a different count to it. For myself. So I wrote that no rules part.
No rules, Sandy.
No rules, Sandy.
Tell me what that means.
Normally, when Nick and I are recording or writing together, I'll like secretly write something. And then the first time he'll hear it is when I record it. And that was the case with this. So it was kind of a joke to him. And we kept
it. But also, it just felt like, well, when we played the song for our friend Jen, who we play everything for, she immediately was like, oh, that's got to be the title of the record. And I think the thing that she was pointing out that we realized she was right about was just that it kind of perfectly encapsulated everything that we were feeling when we were making this thing was, you know, just the last couple of years. And I think everyone's going through this great reexamination of like what matters and what doesn't. And what did I think was important that I'm now realizing actually isn't. And did I make the box that I see myself in? And I think for a lot of different reasons, that just felt like all of that was wrapped up, not only in this song, but in this whole process of making this thing. Mm. And it's also just inherently silly, which is, I think, another thing we loved about it was that it's very true, but it's also kind of unserious in a way that felt the way our lives feel. I don't know. I feel like silliness is such a huge part of my emotional experience, like as a human being alive, but I hear it in almost none of the music that I listen to. But it's such, to me, it's the other side of that doom coin, you know? It's like, it's such a natural way of processing horrible things. And it's such a, like an important like seasoning in in at least my emotional experience. And there's so much silliness even in this record to me, even when it's pointing at something that's very serious. And the minute she pointed that out, it's like we couldn't unsee it. Like that had to be the name of the record.
I'm going to do a little rhythm nerd thing for our older listeners out there, because you said you hear the one in a different place where you do, meaning the first beat of the bar.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you maintain that. You're playing, you're starting at different points.
Yes. Yeah, normally that's the kind of thing we would resolve, or one of us would end up, you know, being quote unquote right about. Mm-hmm. But
who would that be, quote unquote?
It changes every time.
Oh, okay.
But I think once she had written the lyrics and they were about what they were about, it was like there was no, like we had to justify both those things. Like the whole song is about letting go of that kind of arbitrary decision.
And having two different experiences
of the same moment,
at the
same
time. Yeah.
Here's the rhythm nerd part of this, which is the song In the Air Tonight, the Phil Collins song.
Yeah.
Yes.
The drummer who played with him, who's this famous jazz drummer, Chester Thompson, always had trouble with that song.
That was Chester Thompson? I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Not playing on the record.
Not on the record, okay. Yeah.
But he played with him live.
Live.
And it's because in that drum pattern, there's no one.
And oh my gosh,
always
you're
faked
right.
Him out. I mean, but that's different than what you're doing. You're starting the one different places, which is really interesting.
Yeah, our brains interpret that melody differently.
I think I'm right.
The funniest part, though, is that we brought two other people in on that. So Gabriel Kahane did the string arrangement, and TJ Miani played drums on that. And the wildest part was that Gabriel heard it the way I hear it, and TJ heard it the way Amelia hears it.
Oh.
And they each tried to lean into making it so that neither of us was right.
Mm-hmm.
But we were split evenly of all the people who played on that song. That's how it should be.
I love the string arrangement on that. And I don't know if this was conscious. It reminds me of a Steve Reich piece.
Oh.
Thanks. That's what Gabe and I talked about that when he was going through a strong Steve Reich phase.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we wanted to talk about
That first loop particularly.
Yeah. He's moving in and out.
Yeah. He's just so... He's so good at that feeling of having the strings almost like they're like a flock of birds, like swarming over the top of the song. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about that a lot, that feeling of something fluttering over the top of it. And he's just that, it's, I don't know, that you feel the movement of it. You almost want to like swirl your body around. I want to as I'm listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool.
We'll be right back with more from Nick Sanborn and Amelia Meath after a quick break.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora, to inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to Musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
We're back with the rest of Bruce Headlam's conversation with Nick Sanborn and Amelia Meath.
I'm not going to express this very well, but I'm going to try, which is lots of people perform music and then you hear, oh, they're singing this song, they're doing this. There's something about your music that you seem that you're inside the song.
Hmm.
And that's the only way I can express it. I'm not even entirely sure what it means. It's more of a feeling. But it's though something's swirling around and you're in the middle of it. It's very different kind of performance. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I think if you're going to perform, being a musician is such a strange thing in general because you have like two main products. You have your performance and you have the recording. Some would say you also have your persona. At first, I was really into performing and Nick was really into recording. And now we've kind of like met in the middle and maybe shifted a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
But I have a very strong belief that like if you are performing a song for somebody, you're going through an energetic shift and anytime you try to get someone to listen to your music, you're literally holding out your hand, being like, here, come with me to this place. And it's much more easier to get them to come with you if you promise a journey, if you go there with them.
Well, I also think there's a thing, a lot of, on the records at least, we're both really resistant to the idea of the vocals sounding like a performance. And we want it to really feel intimate and to feel like you're there with us. And so a lot of times that leads us to using the very first take that Amelia does, like the minute after she writes it, she'll sing it into a microphone and we'll kind of think it's going to be for the demo or whatever. But like that ends up being the real take. And every time we try to redo it, inherently, we kind of hear it as some version of a performance rather than her living the song. And it's a really sensitive and really specific thing, but so much of our music is about inviting the listener in. And I think that's just another way that we're really sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm. But everything's very integrated somehow. And again, I'm struggling to explain this, but it's not as though, you know, if you're listening to an old Ella Fitzgerald record, you're like, well, here's where she hits that high note. You're not really thinking what the band's doing behind her. It may be a great record. It's not a criticism. But your records seem to be, it's the space or something that you're in.
Thanks. I also think a part of that maybe is that everything that's not her voice that's in the track, we try to make it a thing that came from her voice in some way. So even if it's just the musical idea, like all of it to me is intended to point back towards her voice, like because that's the doorway, you know, at least emotionally for me when I'm hearing something, it's usually the vocal. If it's a vocal record, that's what I'm hearing. So a lot of our songs, the minute something distracts me from her voice, we'll usually get rid of it. We want all of it to be like kind of like the realization of a dream that she's having.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of electronic music almost ideologically wants to eliminate human sounds or acoustic sounds.
But ironically, to me, it's like, but all those instruments were still made by humans with this idea of perfection in them. Like even like an 808 drum machine, like that's a fascinating device to me on a human level, just because somebody sat down and thought, all right, well, it's in 4-4 and there's 16 steps and these are what these drums sound like. And this is what swing sounds like. It's like by creating your idea of a perfection, you're showing the humanity of it. You're showing kind of like what we think of as the right, quote unquote, thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's super interesting to me. I love incorporating those things, and especially when they're right up against very broken human elements, because I think it draws out like kind of the humanity of the whole thing. I don't know if I'm saying that quite accurately.
I think you're totally doing it right. Also, it's the most human thing in the world where we're like, well, it's electronic sound, as if electronics were born and not made, you know, by us.
Well, mandolins and guitars are made.
100%,
I guess, too. You know, the early electronic music, a lot of those people were obsessed with the sounds they were hearing in everyday life, which was industrial.
Yeah.
And that's what they thought, well, the music needs to reflect people's everyday soundscape, which is, now, they thought everybody lived in the city, so it wasn't, there weren't a lot of synthesizers that imitated cows. We were talking about this before. We live in a digital world, and those are the kind of sounds you're dealing with.
To me, the most interesting things happen when you push all those textures up against each other. When there's this, you know, kind of idealized drum machine sound next to a very raw feeling vocal next to, you know, a scratchy sounding acoustic guitar that you can tell has been manipulated. I love that feeling when you can tell somebody's changed something. The kind of human fingerprint on that, mm-hmm. even if it's an electronic sound. That's when all those kind of feelings of humanity come out more to me.
Mm. So, for example, the last song in your album is a big surprise because it starts with somebody strumming an acoustic guitar,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if that's the first time you've done that in a song, but it's a surprise. When those acoustic sounds come in, it's a jolt.
Yeah.
So you have the acoustic, but then I think your vocal is treated, isn't it? You ran it through something. It's not just...
We use a really old vocoder. Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that right?
We love the old vocoders.
Yeah.
Because most of them are broken. And so they do really wild and strange things.
Again, you like hear the chip. Like, I just mm-hmm. love that feeling. But that one, like, you know, like we... To me, that the vocoder in that song has just as much humanity as Sam's saxophone. You know, it's... Because it's all coming from her voice. Like, both the vocoder sound and Sam's melodies that he's playing are both from this very raw vocal take that she did. And it feels like they're all leading back to that same thing.
Mm-hmm. It's been amazing watching you work your circuit board there. your toy train set.
Yes, my train set.
Yeah, it reminded me of, I don't know if you've seen those famous, probably in documentaries, you know, George Martin or Paul McCartney will demonstrate how they used faders on Tomorrow Never Knows.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
And I don't know if this is actually the case. I'm sure it's not the case, but it's probably the case in pop music. It's the first time the performance was really the engineer's performance that really made that.
Yeah, mixer is still an instrument. That's mm-hmm. what I love playing a mixer.
Yeah. Well, you did it well. It's just amazing to watch. It's a very, if someone's used to more traditional instruments, it's just an amazing thing to watch.
Thanks.
I mean, for people who kind of perform in this space, this kind of digital space, I would say two things. You seem fascinated by analog technology. You got a song about a train. You got a radio song. And is it true you used old tape of your mother used to cut tape for radio? Is
mm-hmm.
that, mm-hmm.
Oh, and, yeah, we used her old reel-to-reel for that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. The second thing is, and you know, you've got little snatches of conversation and phone messages. Musicians now have to live in that digital world. They have to be active on social media. They have to interact with fans in a way they didn't before.
Mm.
Not like in the good old days of Twitter.
Good old days of Twitter. So nice on there.
And music is made in a very different way now. I'll put on a record at home. And my son, who's 8, will say, well, it hasn't started yet. And I'm like, well, no, it's just really quiet. Like, you're not used to quiet music anymore. Like, just wait for the vocal to come in. Actually, it's been on, like, the piano's been there for 30 seconds. But, you know, the range is different, everything.
Oh, yeah.
I know every musician is in this world now. You guys sort of also exploit those things as part of your sound, and I think almost part of your philosophy. What's it like being those kind of digital creatures?
The only way I figured out how to do it is to do it authentically, which isn't as glamorous looking as the way other people do it. In order to be able to interact with the internet in any way that feels honest, I have to be myself, which is kind of unfortunate because being yourself is embarrassing most of the time, particularly when you're doing it for your job. But that's the only way I've been able to do it. It takes a lot of energy. But because of that, because of the internet, like, here we are. We're able to do this. This is our job because of the amount of people we were able to reach.
Mm-hmm. But your song Radio addresses that. It asks about how many clicks and have you done something so you can make the news?
It does. It does. It does.
Was that performed with, or was that written with some ambivalence?
Yeah. Yeah, I was in a phase of songwriting where I was really into being very direct and talking about what I was feeling. With that song in particular, I wanted to write about, you know, wanting to get on the radio, trying to make our sound something that was consumable by a lot of people, or to be able to convince a radio promoter that it was consumable by a lot of people, but also trying to be authentic at the same time. And the way that those two things interact. Also, how pop culture and media is just an excellent distractor from disaster.
You've mentioned disaster a couple of times during this interview. So do you see yourself sort of as a bulwark against disaster, your music? Or is it just what people have to do if they feel they're facing something terrible in life?
Oh my God, no. I think, you know, an important part of living is experiencing destruction and heartbreak and sadness. And I think for me, the thing I like to think, that my hope is that the music can be company, a friend, something that people can look at and say, here's This happened to them, or this is my song for feeling how I feel right now. It's something that can float people through the saddest times.
Okay. You guys made a terrific film during the pandemic where you did a bunch of your songs with a full band.
Yeah.
And it's called With Love, and I suggest everybody will go out and watch it. What was that like? Is that the first time you had rearranged the songs for?
No, we had done, right in the fall of 2019, we took that same band out on tour, and we did like 7 shows? We did like 4 cities. We didn't do very many. Mm-hmm. And then there's a full-length doc of that out that you can find on there. It's just called With. And so that was kind of the first time we'd really leaned into that. We'd tried playing stuff with people before and it'd been great, but this was the first time we like really put a show together and put it on for people. And then when the pandemic hit and we were putting this record out, we realized that this could be a great excuse for us all to, if we could figure out a way to safely get together, that this could be just an amazing thing for all of us involved, that we missed each other so much and we really wanted to find a way to do it. And so, you know, it was like right when testing was getting really available and, you know, we had this whole thing worked out. But that was kind of the whole impetus, was just, we miss our friends. And the craziest part has been hearing other people who watch it, who weren't there, saying that they connected with that same thing about it, that mm-hmm. it made them feel more together. It was, I'm so grateful for the entire experience.
Mm-hmm. It was really fun to shoot, mostly because we hadn't gotten to play music with other people in, you know, a year. Mm-hmm. And we'd put out a record during the pandemic, Free Love. Everyone who released an artistic feat during the pandemic knows the strange feeling of like dropping a pea down a plumb line or something. Mm-hmm. So it felt really great to get to celebrate with our friends for a live stream, for something that had been, you know, a way of revisiting the songs that we hadn't gotten to play yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it just existed for its own sake. Mm-hmm. That was, I think, one thing I loved about it, was there's nobody had to do that. I mean, we weren't making a ton of money or anything. It wasn't like, you know, it just existed because we wanted to be together. It was great.
Well, I recommend it to everybody. So you've got this new album. What is next?
Oh, we're going to tour forever.
Yeah.
Right now, we put the record out so fast. for the first time in like 7 years, we're opening for a band right now, which is really fun. But we'd already signed up to open for them before we'd written the record. So now we're in this interesting space where we just put this record out and we're opening an arena tour.
Who are you opening for?
Oh, Odessa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's it like playing this music to so many people, to such a big audience?
It's nice. It's good. Yeah. Well, you know, when we play shows, it's usually, it's like 4,000 less people, but not that. They're like comparable to our size.
Yeah, it's like us times two. It's great. Yeah.
No, I didn't mean like, only ever played to like CD bars.
I wish. I miss bars. It's really nice. It's interesting. It's different. It's different group of people than like our fan base. And it's a whole different job to open shows than it is to host them. So we're like getting our chops back.
Yeah, the wildest part is that's all we used to do. Like that's how we kind of came up. We got a couple of great opening slots like for Tune Yards and Volcano Choir, like right when we started, kind of miraculously. And we just like loved, we relished that feeling of like having 35 or 40 minutes or whatever to like convince everyone to like you. And we've been pretty much headlining ever since. And so it's like, I don't know. I've said this before, but it feels like I'm like working out every night. It feels like we're like getting a muscle back that
really
we like lax, you know, through the cushiness of everyone already knowing all the words to our songs.
Yeah.
It's been
totally
great.
Different.
I love it. It's like, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to react to on any given night is so, it changes so wildly. It's cool.
Exactly. So we're going to finish this tour and then hopefully in 2023, we'll actually tour No Rule Sandy.
Right. And this is how musicians make their living now.
Oh, yeah. That's
where,
that's the only place where the money is. That and, you know, car commercials.
Well, I'm looking forward to both. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been just fabulous, and the performances were wonderful. It's just great.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks so much for having us, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks to Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn of Sylvanesso for coming through Broken Record to talk about their lives, creative process, and their new album. You can hear all of our favorite Sylvanesso songs on a playlist at brokenrecordpodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brokenrecordpodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, Eric Sandler, and Jennifer Sanchez. Our editor is Sophie Crane. Our executive producer is Mia LaBelle. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you like this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
MuseAura is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of MuseAura. To inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, M-U-S-O-R-A.com, to start a new musical journey today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.